let me out till 2:45. Would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Welcome back to Senior Living Connecticut, a show that explores solutions for Connecticut's adults striving for the best in senior living. I'm Bill Corbett, manager of Evergreen Crossings Independent Senior Living and author of the book, The 2.0 Entrepreneur. I'm talking with Esther Pearl. She's the North Central Region Program Director for the Alzheimer's Association Connecticut chapter. And we've been talking about what the warning signs are for Alzheimer's. And what I'd, if you would, thank you for staying on after the break. And tell people a little bit about how they can get in touch with you, and then let's cover the last two warning signs.
Sure. So one of the services we provide that I'm most proud of is our 24-hour helpline, and that number is 1-800-272-3900. It can be reached any time of the night or day. And most of the folks who answer that are master's level clinicians, very well trained, and are able to answer any question you have, address any concern that you may have, and point you in a direction that will be most helpful for you. And also our website, alz.org. And if you're looking specifically for information in Connecticut, you can do a /CT on that alz.org/CT for more information. If you're interested in finding about our 6 walks here in Connecticut, you can find that at act.alz.org/Connecticut.
All right. You were going over, before we went to the break, you were going over the 10 warning signs of Alzheimer's. We had 9 and 10 to cover. Can
yes,
you cover
we
those?
Do. Sure thing. So going to number 9 is withdrawal from work or social activities. So as a person's brain becomes impacted, it will affect more and more areas of their lives. We talked just a few minutes ago about problems with words and speaking or writing. And so part of where this impacts is someone's ability to follow a conversation, to interact with people and stay on track. And so when that becomes more difficult, the person may start withdrawing from hobbies or social activities that just become too overwhelming and too confusing from what they used to enjoy. And number 10 is changes in mood or personality. Sometimes people will become confused. They may become suspicious, depressed, anxious, because they're not quite understanding how all the pieces are fitting together anymore. They may see a loved one talking quietly with another person and believe that they're having an affair, or they're keeping secrets, or they're plotting, because they are not really absorbing the whole picture anymore, only bits and pieces of it.
So that number 10 is what I had mentioned to you, the changes I saw in my grandmother, where she wasn't the same person anymore. Her personality actually changed.
Right.
And she was angry and cussed like she never did.
Right.
And
well, the other thing that works into that is as the disease progresses through the brain, the parts of the brain that help us use that filter about what's okay to say and how to say it and what perhaps you should not say, that becomes impacted. So whatever the thought is may just come out in a way that we're not used to.
That's the real person that comes out, maybe. That's a little frightening. All right, so what we're going to do is we'll ask you about the services that are available to people here in Connecticut. And probably if they're listening in a different state, which they would on the podcast, similar services may be available in their direct area, correct?
Yes, we have over 70 chapters all over the country. So no matter where you are, there are services available. And I have to say, one of the silver linings of the pandemic is that we learned how to adapt to a virtual environment very quickly. And now that we're able to be back in person, we're very excited, but the virtual aspect is not going away.
I was going to tease you because you said something we learned from the pandemic, and I go, what, Zoom? And that's exactly
what we have learned. We've been able to transition all of our programs and services to virtual. So now we're adding back in the in-person, but the virtual are not going away. So as I mentioned earlier, our 24-hour helpline is a phenomenal service. So that number again is 800-272-3900. And so some of the programs we offer, and I want to point out that all of our services are provided free of charge and they are confidential. So we do not charge anything for people who are looking for support and help. So the helpline, our website, we offer early stage social engagement opportunities. So for people who have been diagnosed and a care partner, it's really nice to be able to get together with other people on the journey and have fun, interactive opportunities with people who understand. The community education part of what we do, we have all kinds of workshops. What we talked about today is a very, very brief summary of our 10 warning signs program. We have a full hour one available in local communities and also through our website. We have a pre-recorded version. So we have the education programs, the support groups. We've got some traditional in-person support groups, traditional virtual support groups. We have sort of what we call specialty groups. So they may be adult children caregiver groups or spousal groups or long-distance caregivers, whatever specific circumstances a person may be in. Somewhere in the country, we've got a program to help you.
And so what seems... And have you been here to do a workshop here?
I have not yet.
Oh,
we
got to talk about that when we're after the show to see if that's something we can schedule.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people would be interested in coming to hear you talk.
Yes. So a couple of other things I want to point out is we have so many ways to be involved. We've got about 20 staff here in the state of Connecticut. Everything else we do is done by our volunteers. We have amazing volunteers. And so some of the ways people can get involved is most of our support group facilitators are volunteers. We have community educators. So many of the folks who come out and present programs live or virtually are volunteers. Our social programs are generally led by volunteers. Our signature fundraising events, such as the Six Walks, Walk to End Alzheimer's throughout the state of Connecticut, are primarily organized and run by our amazing volunteers. We have volunteers on our diversity, equity, and inclusion group, and we also have volunteers in our office who are amazing at helping us enter all the information that we need to. We have advocates who work on a local, regional, state, and national level to make an impact. And then we need people to help every day with all the things that we do, including research and clinical trials. So when we raise funds, 78% of what we raise goes to Alzheimer's care, support, research, awareness, and advocacy. And so the research part of it is super important because we know we will not be able to find the answers to these questions, such as why do some people develop the disease and some people don't, unless we have research. And we want everyone to participate in research. Research is much more than just testing medications on people with a disease or without. There are studies going on that look at caregiver stress. There are studies looking at MRI pictures of healthy brains. There are studies that look at family history or caregiver stress. After my husband was diagnosed, I decided to give back in whatever way I could, and I participate in a couple of studies as well. We are rich in study opportunities here in Connecticut, so we're very fortunate to be able to be a part of that.
So the other day, a resident came to the front desk and said, I need help. All of their apartment doors are keypads, and we program them with 4-digit numbers that they might remember, like their birth year, the year they graduated, that kind of thing. And one a resident came to the desk and said, "I my door's not working, and I want you to fix it because I've tried punching the number and it doesn't work." And I said, "Oh dear, that's really odd because these are really trustworthy doors." So I said, "Show me." And oftentimes when residents come to me, I'll say, "Show me," because sometimes it's not what they think and it's something easy for me to fix. And so I said, "Show me." So I followed her to her door. And as we approached her door, she says, "You're going to," she was almost like scolding me, "You're going to see that this door is not working." And I go, "Excellent. I want to see." And she pulled out the remote from her TV and began to press the buttons, pointing it at the door lock. And I was so pleased to know that it wasn't really the door that was an issue. Does that fit in here?
It can. It's something to make note of.
Is that one of the signs?
It's not knowing how to use an item for the intended purpose, which we all do.
Yes.
Sometimes. But it's more looking at how much is this impacting the person's life? What's the history? What other things are happening? One of the things that's important to remember is that memory loss, so this dementia that we started off talking about, can be caused by hundreds of different reasons, not just these irreversible, progressive brain disorders. So it could be everything from dehydration to vitamin deficiencies to side effects of medications to stress, anxiety, and depression, a thyroid issue, cardiovascular disease, hundreds and hundreds of reasons why people may have some memory loss. So the important thing is if you're noticing changes either in yourself or in a loved one, is to keep track of things. What's happening? When is it happening? How frequently? Is it more or less than before? And make sure you get to a doctor, usually a primary physician, to start diagnostic process. Alzheimer's is one of these diseases where the diagnosis starts by ruling out other things. So you have to know, you know, get the blood work done and making sure people know that Medicare covers the annual wellness visit. And so that's a great place to start. And all this really comes down to is helping us with our vision of a world without Alzheimer's and other dementia.
It sounds to me like if we do our due diligence to make sure that we're taking our medications as we should that are prescribed, following a good basic common sense health and eating issues, that it may ward it off a little bit if we have all the things in place to keep us healthy?
Well, one of the really exciting things about research now is that this is exactly what many of the scientists are looking at. They're looking at sort of that holistic lifestyle, the Mediterranean diets, looking at exercise, sleep, just really a whole lifetime of healthy habits, and what impact do they have on our brains further down the road. So stay tuned for more information about research.
Yeah, looking for more stuff to come out on it as the years go by. Thank you so much for coming out. I've been talking with Esther Pearl, North Central Region Program Director of the Alzheimer's Association Connecticut Chapter, and she's been helping us understand the warning signs of Alzheimer's. So appreciate you coming out, Esther.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Senior Living Connecticut. I'm Bill Corbett from Evergreen Crossings Retirement, and you're listening to the show on Talk of Connecticut. Listen every Saturday morning at 8:30. We'll see you then.